Welcome to the AquariMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
We're back on our other mics.
Yeah, hopefully it sounds better.
Yeah, here I am floating around on a Pilates ball.
Should be better for your back.
Yeah, let's hope it works.
Mm-hmm. Thank you to everybody for sending well wishes.
Yes, I think they helped.
Yes.
I'm doing quite a bit better.
Not all the way better yet, but better than last week.
Much.
So, we have Juliet in Paris today, and Antonio in New York, and Gabriel in the Bay Area, and Mick in Carnforth, UK, and Holly in Utah. Oh, and Dan in Washington.
Yes. Quite a lineup today.
Yeah. So, it's good. Shall we get started?
Indeed.
So we're going to go to Juliet first, and she says, I am cursed. I had 10 baby shrimp, and now there's only one. Apart from an assassin snail, there's nothing that I can see in that tank that could have got them. I only have a sponge filter, so it isn't as if they'd been sucked up. The buried females are no longer buried, nor are they carrying eggs. What am I doing wrong? I used to breed tons of shrimp in the same tank without doing anything special. I'm feeling as if someone put a voodoo spell on the whole lot. Depressed. In the larger tank where I had some red cherries, amanos, and endlers, there were no babies, and now I'm almost convinced that the amanos got them. I went to feed them all and saw an amano leap out and grab my best male endler and chomp him up right in front of me, so that confirms that they do actually hunt and don't just get sick fish. I'm guessing they got all the shrimplets, too. That's a little freaky.
Attack of the killer amanos.
I know, you know, you could have, like, a B-movie, it gets some radiation and grows to, like, 200 feet long.
Yeah.
Eat Chicago.
In the 60s.
Yeah. Let's make a movie.
But that's...
That is kind of creepy, though.
Yeah, I knew that amanos were pretty opportunistic feeders, but I've never seen them actually grab a healthy live fish before.
That's just kind of...
I have heard of them eating red cherry shrimp, though, so...
Crazy.
I agree, but it's strange that this other tank is not getting anything.
Yeah, well, and she says, sorry for the depressing news, nothing good to report. I'm hoping that the shrimp keepers out there can give me some tips because this is just getting me down. And here I was dreaming of getting some sulawesi. I think I'll leave them up to the real pros.
Those are some really awesome shrimp. But
what do they look like?
They have lots of different kinds, and they're brilliantly colored. A lot of them are red and white.
Oh.
Different, you know, versions of that, different color patterns of that. But they're quite varied and quite beautiful. And as richly colored as any marine shrimp.
Nice.
Yeah, they're amazing.
So,
yeah,
I don't know.
I'm a bit at a loss. It seems like there must be some predation going on, but from what? I've heard of all sorts of things eating baby shrimp, even amphipods.
She's
are rumored to eat baby shrimp.
Does she? Our cat likes to get in and drink the Daphnia water.
Yeah.
He's so naughty.
Now I need a cover for that jar.
He has plenty of water in his own bowl, but...
He vastly prefers the Daphnia.
Flavored water.
With crunchy bits in it.
Crunchy
apparently.
Bits in it. I don't know, maybe she has a cat. Her cat's eating all the shrimp.
No, this is really weird, especially since nothing has changed in that tank particularly, and they were doing really well before. I don't know.
So, Mick and others, if you have some ideas.
We would be happy to hear them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry we can't do much more for you, Juliet, except for commiserate. We do that willingly.
Yes. Hopefully somebody else will have some ideas.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to Tony from New York.
All right.
He says, greetings, Aquarimax. Russ, so sorry to hear about your back. Feel better soon. Thank you, Tony. I wanted to let you know that this week's podcast sounded great, even though it wasn't recorded on your usual equipment.
Good. Maybe when we do mobile podcasts, we can just use that.
Yeah, that'd be good. And he has a response for Tom, who's asking about fish last week, what kind of fish to keep.
And his parameters were he wanted to be able to keep it in a tank 30 gallons or fewer. He wanted it to be a fish that retained its natural appearance.
Mm-hmm.
What were the other things? Those were two of them.
Oh, I can't remember now. Honestly.
Well, those were a couple.
Kind of, he wanted gentle fish, didn't he?
I think so.
Like, not totally aggressive fish.
I think so. And he wanted them to be able to do well in a planted tank.
Right.
So there.
Those are some of,
yes,
some of what he's looking for.
And so Tony is responding to this with, yes, an excellent suggestion.
And he says, I wanted to suggest that you consider the humble killifish. Let me tell you about them. Firstly, they are almost never sold commercially, so there hasn't been pressure to breed them into outlandish shapes and colors. That said, killifish have natural beauty. The males often display blue, red, purple, or yellow patterns. Killifish enthusiasts love keeping species tanks, and hybridization is almost taboo in killie circles, since many killies are endangered or even extinct in nature, and there is a desire to keep the lines intact.
Indeed.
So that sounds like a good fit, that part.
Yeah.
And he goes on to say, of the hundreds of species to choose from, killifish tend to be small as adults, and it is easy to find fish with a 2 to 2.5 inch maximum size. One of my favorite varieties is the Fundulo Panchox Gardnieri, or just Gardnieri.
A lot of people say Gardnieri, but that's okay.
Gardnieri. Just trying to figure out what to do with the lack of vowel between the D and the N.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Are pretty easy to breed. Killifish don't normally need large tanks. A 10-gallon is fine for most. Mine I keep in a spacious 20-long with plenty of Java moss for my 20 Mamroatus fry. The tank will still be suitable for them when they are adult, since the species is not too aggressive with one another and is not a heavy bioload at all. Most killies do great at room temperature, and there's a killifish out there for just about every pH, too. With any luck, you are within range of a local AKA club, but the American Killifish Association also has a helpful website and forum where you can find out more. They will help you track down an appropriate beginner's killie. I've been keeping killifish for just a short time, but find them exotic, endearing, and so energetic.
I think that's an excellent suggestion.
Yeah, I do too.
And I would also add another perk of killifish is that a lot of them will ship as eggs quite easily.
So it's easier to get them that way.
And you can hatch them and do the whole thing yourself. But you
that
just
would be neat.
Get the eggs sent through the mail, and the eggs tend to be quite resilient. Mm-hmm. So
that would be an interesting process in and of itself.
It would. So I second your suggestion,
That's
Tony.
A very good suggestion.
Okay, and now since I can't move very fast, I get to be the one who introduces this next one. So it's Gabriel in the Bay Area.
Yes, and he sent us a very groovy video of his Brita filter design.
Yeah, because in last episode we had asked him to send us an elaboration of how he put it together, and he sent us a video that shows you all the parts and how he puts it together, and he did a pH test in the video showing what his water was like when it came straight out of the tap and what it was like when he had used the filter on it. And
you know, it was quite dramatic.
Quite a dramatic difference, and He showed the setup, how he had a bucket set up when he's doing his water changes. He puts the bucket on the top of the tank, and then he can he slowly drips it out via air lines, a couple of air lines that drip down into his tank. He has a nice tank, too, and he's got some very nice looking rams in there and everything. So check out the video so you can see how to put his idea into practice.
It looks like a really cool idea.
Yeah. So check out his video. It'll be on the show page.
And on Facebook.
And we can put it on Facebook, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So
thank you, Gabriel.
Episode 161 show page or just our Facebook page. Either one.
Yeah.
We'll get you there.
That was very cool.
Yeah. Thank you for sending that.
Okay. So we have an email from Mick.
Mm-hmm. Mick in UK.
UK. Yes. Okay. He says, hi guys, hope life is settling down a bit for you. Massive respect for Russ recording from his sick bed. That is some serious dedication. I agree. And then he says, may the back be with you.
Well, my back is coming back. So, thank you, Mick.
He says, I was very interested in the discussion about doing quote-unquote easy fish being seen as a cop-out or somehow lesser down the fish-keeping ladder. I am a great believer in keeping and breeding what you enjoy. And I will say amen to that.
Yes, I agree too.
I have also found that to get good results breeding good quality live bears in any numbers is more of a challenge than many other fish.
See, keywords, good quality right there.
Yeah.
Yep, very true.
Yeah. I have had great struggles with Picta-type guppies getting the water right for long-term care. And with small fry drops and a voracious appetite for newly born fry, these are very challenging, not so easy fish.
Right.
Likewise with my Koi swordtails, trying to get the female out of the drop tank without her pecking off several of the fry can be really frustrating. So my message to everyone is, do what you really enjoy and try to do it really well. End of rant, he says.
And that's perfectly true.
That's a good rant.
Very good point.
He says, thought you might like a couple of pictures of my new setup containing my China Asiatica snakehead called Titian.
Or maybe Titan.
Titan?
I think it's just a typo. It's probably Titan.
Okay. He's feeling a little bit too Roman or something there. I don't know. Gotta go back to the Greeks and be Titan, yeah.
There you go.
So yeah. Doesn't Titan only have... isn't Titan T-I-T-A-N?
Yeah, I think it's just a typo.
Oh, okay.
You meant to type Titan.
Which means red. I've always shied away from larger or predatory fish, but we got some in at work, and as he was the last one, I felt we had made a bond over the last few weeks. He's great to watch and loves either defrosted lancefish or the hikari floating food sticks. He's about 7 inches long so far, nice and round, and has a good appetite. I set him up in a 2-foot-long tank with a good fitting lid, well-planted tank, and for now, and we'll bump him up in a few months when he gets larger. It's surprising how he's become much less skittish and recognizes already the sound of the lid with food. I'm going to try and get a video of him feeding from tongs later this week.
That would be cool.
That is cool.
We'll wait for that. That'll be awesome.
He says, was also amazed to hear suggested that there are people with pastimes and hobbies that don't include aquaria. I can't imagine what they are.
I like that, too.
That's good. So tell us more about these. Chana or Kenna?
I would say Chana myself. Chana, okay. But people say all sorts of things. I think a lot of people just say Chana.
Asiatica snakehead.
Yeah.
Why is it called a snakehead?
Well, you saw the pictures, right?
Yeah, but...
it's kind of a long, skinny, snake-like fish. Serpentine sort of fish. And there are a number of species from various places, but I think they're mostly Asian, as I recall. Mm-hmm. We had a big mess some years ago when somebody released one that apparently had a mouthful of babies. Some of them are mouth brooders, some of them are bubble nest builders and different things, but apparently someone released one with a mouthful of babies, or several adults, or I don't remember, or know if they even know, but back east in Maryland area.
Oh, really?
And now they're...
it's not too cold
populating the area. Apparently not.
They come from colder regions originally, or...?
Well, there are different species, and I guess different species have different temperature tolerances, but this one's doing just fine, unfortunately.
Oh, dear.
So they can be a problem in certain situations, but of course this one that Mick has, not a problem.
Well, no.
I guess they're popular food fish in some parts of Asia, as well as, you know, pet fish in other situations. So I think that's why they were released.
Because they wanted to come back and fish them later?
Probably. Something like that. That's what I heard anyway. But of course Mick's fish has nothing to do with those situations. He's got one in a captive environment, and he's not planning on releasing it, so it's perfectly fine and legitimate, but they are...
how big do they get?
Well, it depends on the species. Again, this one tops out at around 14 inches, I think.
So what? Okay.
So
not quite 2 feet.
It's only about half the length, and not near the mass that it will eventually reach right now.
What kind of mass do they reach? Are they just get really big around, like a snake, or...?
Well, it's going to be a fairly large fish. What I'm trying to get at is that a 7-inch fish is not half the mass of a 14-inch fish.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. So. Yeah. I don't know exactly how big it's going to get, but it'll be a lot bigger than twice its size now. Its mass will be much bigger
species,
than that.
How big do they get, do you know?
Well, the only thing I remember is that that species is a mid-size one. So there are species that get bigger.
Wow. And they're predatory. They eat.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got his eating the...
lance fish and the pellets.
Sticks, yeah.
Yeah. So they're not...
it doesn't have to be live
piscivores.
Food.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be live food. They're probably not too particular.
Interesting.
But they tend towards carnivory.
I guess you couldn't really keep them with much else, huh?
Well, I'm sure that they would be fine with fish that were big enough for them not to swallow, but anything...
they'd have to be big enough fish.
Yeah.
You'd have to have a really big tank.
As I remember, they have quite a gape. They can open their mouth fairly wide. So it would have to be a fairly big fish.
Quite a gape.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. I don't think anybody's ever used that phrase that I've heard before in live conversation.
Really?
Yes, that was a good one. I give you points for that today.
Okay. Well, thank you. Yeah, I think that's great. I love the fish. It has a nice look to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's got kind of an interesting pattern on its scales. And so check out the pictures. Those will be on the show page, too. And thank you, Mick, for sending that. Okay. So next is Holly.
Yes.
Holly in Utah, but from California.
Mm-hmm.
But she says, she contributed on Facebook a link to a story about fish using sign language.
No, I didn't have a chance to read this, so tell me what it said.
Okay, it's really pretty cool. Apparently, they were studying some reef fish, mm-hmm. and they found several species that work cooperatively to hunt. And we're not talking about within species necessarily, even just across species. There's one fish that
really?
Teams up with a moray eel. It's not a moray eel. I think it was some type of grouper.
It's a grouper and a moray eel.
That team up to hunt.
Okay, that is a cartoon in the making.
And then another one where they have octopus and I think it was might have been a reef trout or something like that. I can't remember. Anyway, I'm not very good about telling you which species are involved, but you can check out the link on our Facebook page. But anyway, the idea is that these species will work together hunting and they'll help each other flush out certain things. Along, you know, the crevices in the reef, and they'll flush them out, and then the prey animal will swim away and duck into a hole, and one of the fish will go and waggle its head right in front of where the other one is to show the other partner in the hunting team where it is. And they found that when they do that, the partner is more likely to find it and catch it.
Interesting. And then they just split it.
And then presumably, I don't remember if it said anything in that about the article. Yeah, I mean, in the article about that, but
I would imagine so, because otherwise there would be no.
Otherwise, there would be little
point.
Advantage. So I am assuming that they share.
Unless they
it
switch
extent.
Off. You ate it last time, so I'll show you know.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how that works, but
I'll
they said
this
that
time.
It does fulfill this gesture that they make mm-hmm. fulfills all the criteria for a gesture
uh-huh.
as defined, you know, as officially
uh-huh.
that it's a signal that is used that doesn't fulfill any other function that it is. Provides information to the other organism. The other organism responds. Yeah, the recipient responds in an appropriate way, and so on. And it really seems it improves their hunting chances. It's pretty cool.
That's pretty neat.
And they didn't know that fish were capable of this. They only knew that there were very few animals that are documented to have functional mm-hmm. gestures. Humans, of course, being one, but there aren't very many beyond humans. Ravens are one.
What do ravens do?
That's a great question. I don't know exactly what ravens do with their gestures. They're very intelligent, too. Considered one of the most intelligent birds. So
ravens are awesome.
It's interesting to see, and I'm fascinated by it, so I'm glad that Holly sent it. So thank you, Holly,
That's
for sending
it.
That's
very cool.
And
you know, animals
check
in
it
general,
out.
I think, do a lot more and are much more capable of what most scientific communities will give them credit for.
I think that's often true.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've got one more.
Mm-hmm.
We have Dan in Washington, who asked on Facebook, is there a difference between red cherry shrimp and crystal red shrimp besides how they look?
Yes. That's a great question. And the answer is yes. Now let's elaborate a little bit. Okay. Well, the red cherry shrimp is in the genus Neocaridina, and the species is usually Heteropoda, which is and that refers to red cherry shrimp, to the wild type, and all the color varieties thereof, and there are tons of them.
Okay.
In fact, I recently stumbled upon a blue velvet variety on the internet. Very
are
interesting.
They fuzzy?
Very pretty. No, but they have kind of a soft blue color.
Oh,
to them.
I want to see.
I'll show you. But I'm getting ahead of myself, sorry. And they have some that are different colors. But anyway, that species is what red cherry shrimp are. The other shrimp, the crystal red shrimp, the genus is Caridina. So they are related. I believe they're in the same family.
What was
of
the other one again?
There's Neocaridina, the type we have, the red cherry shrimp.
Uh-huh.
And then there's Caridina, without
okay.
the neo.
So they're related, but one is old and one is new. And
yeah,
then
one is the shrimp and one is
the new
shrimp.
One is blue.
Yeah, there you go. I don't borrow shrimp.
Yeah, I don't know what shrimp do at their weddings. So.
Yeah. So that's, you know, they are from each, there are two different genera, involved, and in terms of husbandry, there's quite a difference as well. Red cherry shrimp are hardier than the crystal red shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
They're like a red cherry shrimp. There are several color varieties. There are the black and white or bumblebee shrimp, often termed that way, and other various ones. They have ones that are just pure white with a red spot on their head. That are
wow.
very expensive if they're good quality shrimp.
Do they have them in Japan?
Yes. Yes, they're popular
they
in Japan.
Developed?
Probably developed in Japan, I imagine. But anyway, so they have different color varieties, but they're a little smaller as adults, and in terms of husbandry, they are a little less forgiving of fluctuating water parameters and tend to like water on the soft and acid side. So that sums up the big differences. I mean, there are other things too, but I have never kept the crystal reds, but from what I understand, they're just not quite as hardy as the others. So.
Well, very good.
Yeah. And good question, so I hope that helps.
Did you have anything for us today? Did you want to tell them about your reminiscences?
Which one?
Down in the pet book.
Oh, yeah. I have this ancient book. It was
that you've had since you were a kid, right?
Yeah, yeah. My mom brought it home from a library sale when I was a kid. And it was an old book then. It was
written in
1955. So this book was written by a man, his name's Jack Bentley Astrup, and his philosophy was that he should not write about any pet unless he had kept it himself, which I think that makes sense. Mm-hmm. He wants to make sure he has some first-hand experience before he writes about it. But some of the things are just incredible. I don't know how he ever managed. Like, he says, in an aquarium that's 24 inches by 12, you can safely keep up to 50 fishes, he says.
Wow.
And this is without a filter. It's a planted tank, and he has 2 25-watt strip bulbs over the tank, he said. He said, I never keep more than 30. But this was really interesting because I don't know that they had fluorescent, like, T12s back then.
1955.
And that would be, 50 watts over that tank, which, if it were fluorescence, that's a fair amount of light there. But if it's an incandescent, it seems like you'd cook your fish and never need a heater. And that's mostly what they had back then, was just incandescent lights. But that he said strip bulbs kind of puzzles me. I'm not sure what he meant by that. If he just meant the long, skinny incandescent bulbs that they used to use?
Maybe so.
I don't know. I inherited some really old aquarium hoods when I was a kid that took those bulbs, and there was that one that used to shock me every time I touched it. Different things like that.
I'm glad we don't have that one anymore.
Yeah, me too. So, anyway, it was just kind of funny to reminisce about that.
It was interesting to go through the book and see how much things have changed. Mm-hmm.
And there was a couple other things I wanted to talk about this week. I can't always remember all of them, but our Daphnia are going crazy now, finally, the ones that we put outside.
It's the cats, but...
No, I'm talking about the ones outside that are covered.
Just joking.
But I'd been worried because the temperature had been so cool and not very reliable. I mean, to warm up for a day and then get really cold. Mm-hmm. Daphnia weren't reproducing very quickly. And I hadn't had a chance to go look at them because my back for a while.
Right.
And so I hadn't checked on them. And yesterday I checked on them and the boom has boomed. Spring has sprung in some of the Daphnia. The population has exploded and there are hundreds and hundreds in the buckets and soon to be thousands. So I'm very excited to see that.
So if you want Daphnia, we can chip out Daphnia.
Yes. And the experiment with the frog in the red cherry shrimp tank working quite well. The amphipods are less numerous by the day. The frog is quite stout and seems quite content. And the shrimp are doing quite well too. So I think what I'm going to do in a few days is take the frog out, let the shrimp have a chance to recover frogless, and then if I see the amphipods building up again, I'll pop him in. Just keep doing that. And in the meantime, he gets mysis shrimp when he's not eating the amphipods. So it seems like a pretty good deal.
Sounds like a good froggy deal.
Oh, and our runt fish is fully the size of a...
She's not really a runt anymore. She caught up.
Yep, so
good.
We've done experiments with... I mean, that experiment with the betta, it immediately began to grow and kept growing, and now it's an adult. And I can't remember if we mentioned that or not. Not quite as big as some of the ones in here, but fully as large as some of the smaller ones in the 55-gallon here. So it has worked.
Much better.
And I think I'll place her in with these pretty soon, which I could do safely because there are over 20 fish in there, so they're not going to really have a problem with that.
Yeah. Right.
And I think there were a couple of other things. Oh, we're worried about one of our goldfish. The smaller goldfish is looking quite sick, so we're starting to worry about that.
You put the UV sterilizer on the tank.
I did, but I think I need to isolate him now because he's not looking too good. But anyway, we'll try to keep you updated on things and how that goes. But I do love the UV sterilizer. It seems like it's
It's a nice tool to have. And since I really can't remember that other thing I was going to say, what I would like to ask you to do, because you didn't say hello in your multilingual method today, it was just say goodbye instead.
Okay. What language shall we do?
Just pick one.
Just pick one.
Yeah.
Does it have to be one that I haven't done yet, since we haven't done goodbye in any
Or you could just let me do it, because I have one in mind.
Okay, you do it.
Okay. Se ci vediamo, ci vediamo. E se non ci vediamo, accendiamo la luce.
Okay.
Okay.
Maybe somebody in Boston will know what that
means. Should I tell?
Yeah.
Okay. It's Italian for, we'll see it, if we see it. And if we don't, turn on the light. So.
I didn't mean to.
Did it?
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.